Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Hello, everyone. This is Samara Luna.
And this is Raven Fired Off.
And Serenity is apparently MIA, so as soon as we figure out where he's at, he'll be on. So tonight's subject, I figure, you know, we've been doing a lot of serious subjects here lately. Figure we'd do something fun. And we're going to talk about in bulk. Yes, it just passed a couple days ago, but I figure we talk about in bulk or candle moss or whatever you want to call it, and
disting, charming of the plow, you know.
Yeah. And we'll discuss, you know, what, how it's celebrated and what it's, how it's looked at in different religions and traditions. So hopefully we'll have a neat conversation. I also, if anyone wants to call in and tell us what your tradition is, if you have an in bulk tradition, you can. Our phone number is area code 347-308-8222, and you can call in and press 1 if you want to talk. That'll let me know that you want to be on the air with us, and you can tell us your traditions. So, Ravenfire, where do you want to start?
Well, I guess I'll talk a little bit about the history. I know since you do a lot of Celtic, I'll let you talk about the Gaelic customs and stuff, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So as far as the history of in bulk, the date of in bulk is thought to have been significant in Ireland since the Neolithic period. This is based on the alignment of some megalithic monuments. For example, the mound of the hostages on the hill of Tara. And the inner chamber is aligned with the rising sun on the dates of Imbolc and Samhain, something we thought was very, very interesting. And so, Samara, since you follow a Celtic path, can you tell us about some of the customs?
Well, Imbolc is pretty much known as a Celtic holiday, pretty much. Or at least that's where it started. It was the festival marking the beginning of spring, during which great feasts were held. It was also, it's also known to be in some of the oldest and earliest Irish literature from the 10th century onward, so there is some evidence for it. As long, it was one of the four Gaelic seasonal festivals, which is Samhain, Imbolc, Beltane, and Lunasa. And as far as how it was named, there's various things on the names of how it came about. I'm trying to remember, even though I have it right in front of me, there's so much information. I know one of the names where they think that in bulk came from had to do with ewe's milk or, and let's see, what were some of the other ones? Yeah, in bulk has been traditionally associated with the onset of lactation of ewes and lambing season, which could vary as much as 2 weeks before or after the start of February. So that was one thing. It's also said that the blackthorn is said to bloom at in bulk. It was the festival of the hearth and home. And celebrations often involve hearth fires, special foods such as buttermilk, bannock, for example, which I've made bannock a couple times, divinations or watching for omens, candles, or a bonfire if the weather permitted.
Hey, Samara, what in the heck are bannocks?
You know, I'm getting them mixed up with Calcanon right now, but I have made them before.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember which is which. Tell you what, I will let everyone know before the end of the show.
Okay.
Bread, but I'm not positive. I have to double check.
I was just curious what it was because, yeah.
We actually have someone calling in that I'm gonna get with them. Area code 803. I know you're listening in. I'll get with you here in just a minute after we finish going over some of this. So, but it had to do with. The lighting of candles, and part of the reason it's called candle moss isn't just because of, you know, Christianity often, you know, goes by the name, uses candle moss, but the lighting of the candles and fires represented the return of warmth and increasing power of the sun over the coming months, and holy wells were visited, and they would pray for health while walking sunwise around the well.
And then also, we right now at Imbolc or at Disting, we are halfway out of winter. Winter is halfway over. Spring is around the corner.
Of course, it feels like spring already here.
I know. 50 degrees outside?
50, it was like 65 earlier. At least that's what my car temperature said.
Oh, gorgeous weather, but I'm like, middle of February in Kentucky?
Yeah.
So do you want to get our caller on the line and I will talk a little bit about
St. Bridget.
Okay.
And I'm going to check the caller.
Okay. So St. Bridget, who Imbolc is strongly associated with, and in Old Irish it's Bridget, Modern Irish it's Breed. St. Breed was thought to have been based on Brigid, a Gaelic goddess. The festival, which celebrates the onset of spring, is thought to be linked with Brigid and her role as a fertility goddess. On Imbolc Eve, Brigid was said to visit virtuous households and bless the inhabitants as they slept. As Brigid represented the light half of the year and the power that will bring people from the dark season of winter into spring, her presence was very important at this time of year. In the 19th century, families would have supper on Imbolc Eve to mark the end of winter. Often some would set aside some food or drink for Breed. Before going to bed, items of clothing or strips of cloth would be left outside for Breed to bless. Ashes from the fire would be raked smooth, and in the morning, they would look for some kind of mark in the ashes, a sign that Breed had visited. The clothes or strips of cloth would be brought inside, and believed now to have powers of healing and protection. In Man,
okay.
During the... Okay, Samara? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm back. Serenity is on with us, and whoever is calling in with area code 803, I tried to answer the phone. You might want to hang up and call back in so I know that you're wanting to be on the air. So, okay, I'm sorry for interrupting you. I thought you were taking
the
call.
Oh, no. Go right ahead.
Well,
welcome,
and if you
Serenity.
Hear some noise in the background, my dog is playing with
Hello.
The toy, and I can't get it away from him. So.
Glad to have you. So
glad to be here.
Well, so
okay. So where were we at?
I just was talking about the powers of healing and protection. About the strips of cloth for Breed. I know you work with her a lot, don't you, Samara?
Actually, I don't. I work with Caradwyn.
You work with Caradwyn. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't really worked with Bridget or Bree, really, actually any, honestly.
No, that's okay.
I think that we have used her in one of our community rituals before. In fact,
mm-hmm.
I think it was probably last Imbolc, but besides that, I really have not worked with her a lot.
Yeah. I haven't really worked any with her, but then again, she's Celtic. so I'm not too familiar with her. Serenity, have you ever worked with Bree or Bridget?
Only just a little bit, not really, and not with any regularity.
Okay. I was just curious, throwing that out there. So, let's see. In the Isle of Man during the 18th century, the custom was to gather a bundle of rushes to stand at the door and invite Breed into the house by saying, Breed, come to my house tonight. Open the door for Breed and let Breed come in. The rushes were strewn on the floor as a carpet or bed for Breed. In the 19th century, some old Manx women would make a bed for Breed in the barn with food, ale, and a candle on the table. And then in the Hebrides, in the late 18th century, a bed of hay would be made for Breed, and someone would then go outside three times and say, Ah, Breed, thing aslig asgabin go libidaya. Sorry, pardon me. Can't pronounce
Gaelic.
Go,
girl. You did better than I would have.
And basically translated in English, it's Breed, come, thy bed is ready. In the early 19th century, the people of the Hebrides held feasts, which women would dance with while holding large cloth, calling Breedan, thing on nals, dien du lebedaya. Breed, come over and make your bed. However, by this time, the bed itself was rarely made. And then something that I'm familiar with, growing up Catholic,
And I think most pagans are familiar with this and have attempted to make one at some point in time.
And fail miserably, might I add. But then again, I never said I was a very, I can't craft very well. I try. It comes
I can, and I still couldn't do it, so. And what would that be?
So, those would be Bridget's Cross. So, in Ireland and Scotland, girls and young women would make a breedog, also called breedhodge or biddy. It's a doll-like figure breed made from rushes or reed, and it will be clad in bits of cloth, shells, or flowers. And then in the Hebrides of Scotland, bright shell or crystal called Riul breed, which means guiding star of breed, was set on its chest. The girls would carry it in procession while singing a hymn to Breed. All wore white, with their hair unbound as a symbol of purity and youth. They visited every house in the area where they received either food or more decoration for the breedog. Afterwards, they feasted in a house with the breedog set in a place of honor so that it would be put to bed with lullabies. When the meal was done, local young men humbly asked for admission to make obeisance to the breedog and join the girls in dancing and merrymaking until dawn. In the late 17th century, Catholic families in the Hebrides would make a bed for the breedog out of a basket, and then in parts of Ireland, the breedog was carried from house to house by children who asked for pennies for poor Biddy. In many parts, only unwed girls could carry the breedog, but in some places, both boys and girls carried it. And then up into the mid-21st century, children still went house to house asking for money for the poor. In County Kerry, men in white robes went from house to house singing. And then Breed's crosses were also made at Imbolc. And it's rushes woven in this shape, similar to a swastika, with a square in the middle and four arms protruding at each corner, and they were often hung over doors, windows, and stables to welcome Breed and protect the buildings from fire and lightning. The crosses were generally left until the next Imbolc. And then in Western Connacht, people would make a cross bride or a Breed's girdle, a great ring of rushes with a cross woven in the middle. Young boys would carry it around the village, inviting people to step through it to be blessed. And then today, some people still make bridges, crosses, and breedogs, or visit Holy Wells to dedicate the Saint Breed on February 1st.
And actually, I got to think about it, and I think it was last year that we all tried to make some at a in bulk circle at through Pagan Community Ministries, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I think
it was really fun. But yeah.
If you didn't know what you were doing about, you can't really make it a cross.
Yeah, and especially if you're like me and have four left thumbs. And then something Reverend Millie said in the chat room about Breed is that she tends to call on Breed for healing. And I know that's one of the big associations with Bridget and Breed is healing in the heart, healing fires, and then I believe Smith's and poetry, those are her realms. But I don't work with her that much, so if there's someone out there who actually does work a lot with Bree and wants to call in and tell us a little bit more about us, we'd be more than happy to have you on the show.
Right, and I know we discussed even doing, and I'm sure you probably did this while I was checking the other lines, that you probably already talked about this, but I think it was setting a piece of cloth or something outside
mm-hmm. yes.
on Bridget's
yeah.
Eve
mm-hmm.
for healing.
Yeah, I think I did touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, and of course, there's other things that go on right around this time. Of course, there's weather divination.
And I thought that was the most interesting thing with the weather divination.
Yeah, and it's snowdrops in the snow. Imbolc was traditionally a time of weather divination and the old tradition of watching to see if serpents or badgers came from their winter dens, maybe a forerunner to the North American Groundhog Day. A Scottish Gaelic proverb about the day is, and
just go to the English.
I'm just going to say it in English because I have enough trouble pronouncing Norse sometimes. Okay. The serpent will come from the hole on the brown day of Breed. There should be 3 feet of snow on the flat surface of the ground. And then Imbolc was believed to be when the Caliach, or the divine hag of Gaelic tradition, gathers her firewood for the rest of the winter. And legend has it that if she wishes to make the winter last a good while longer, she will make sure the weather on Imbolc is bright and sunny so she can gather plenty of firewood. Therefore, people would be relieved if Imbolc is a day of foul weather, as this means Caliach is asleep and winter is almost over. So, and then
yeah, if we went by today, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I know. Oh, and someone also put that Bridget's also well known for fire and smithcrafting and helpful for black. And stuff. So that's another thing
yeah.
I think our listeners will be interested in hearing.
Well, and you've been to Ireland. Yeah, for the person who doesn't know much about the Celtic stuff, you've been to Ireland.
No, I've not been to Ireland. I have been to England and
I
have
thought
been
you
to
went
Scotland.
To Ireland. You went to
no. I've been to England and I've been to Scotland and France.
Oh, for some reason I thought you also went to Ireland.
But I did get to see a very interesting place that kind of relates to our discussion tonight, if you want me to talk about it real quick
Real quick before I forget, I believe there is a, I want to say monastery, but that's for, like, monks. What's the one with the nuns?
Abbey?
Yeah, I believe
The Abbey of Kildare.
That has the Saint Bridget's Eternal Flame.
Yeah, I believe that's the Abbey of Kildare. I believe I've not been to Ireland, so I really couldn't tell you much about it. There is
right.
one really awesome place though I got to see while I was over in England, and I did get to go to Stonehenge and. There was another place I got to go, which I thought was truly amazing. It's the little city of Glastonbury. Mary and Zimmer Bradley used the place as inspiration for Avalon in the books, The Mists of Avalon. And I got to see the Chalice Well there. And there is a connection there, and it's a very beautiful, wonderful place. If you ever get to go to England, I highly recommend spending the money, spending the time, setting aside time to go to Glastonbury. The ruins of the monastery there is very interesting to look at. They supposedly have King Arthur's tomb there. They say it's King Arthur's tomb. Is it? We really don't know. But it's kind of cool that they have this big marker there. But the one really awesome place that I got to go to was the Chalice Garden with the Chalice Well. And for me, it was very inspirational. It was very quiet. It was very peaceful. And I really felt very close to the vine there. And the waters are considered very healing waters. I had some eczema. Of course, I was throwing the healing waters on my eczema. It actually did help, surprisingly enough. And that's
where you have the picture?
On some of my stuff,
on Facebook?
Me going next to a well, yeah, that's where that's from. Mm-hmm.
You ought to share that picture on the Tree of Life Community Center page.
I think I will. I will.
And for those of you that don't know about the Tree of Life Community Center page, there is a page on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Tree of Life.
Tree of Life.
L-O-U-K-Y.
L-O-U-K-Y.
Right? Okay. Tree of Life, L-O-U-K-Y. So,
yeah.
And go on there and join us and friend us, and you can find out all the good information about events that we'll have coming up for fundraisers and such.
Yes.
So.
Yes. And once again, like one thing I do recommend to anyone, if you do travel, like if you're going to England, I always tell people, if you are pagan, you want to go to Glastonbury, you definitely want to see Stonehenge, and you also probably want to see Avebury's Circle, which is a bigger circle than Stonehenge, but you can actually touch the stones at Avebury, which is really cool. So just my two cents on travel.
How do you spell that?
Avebury?
Let
me look it up real quick, because it's kind of an odd spelling to an American. But then again, you're dealing with the difference between American English and British English. And Avebury is spelled A-V-E-B-U-R-Y.
Reverend Dawn also posted it in chat, so thank you, Reverend Dawn.
And then for those who are trying, you know, if you do decide to go over and you want to figure out how to get to Glastonbury, it's spelled Glastonbury. And for anyone of any pagan persuasion, it is a wonderful place to visit. I highly recommend it. And I'm going to get off my travel soapbox now.
Serenity, do you have anything to add?
Not that I can think of.
So I guess, should we talk about different neo-pagan traditions of Imbolc?
Actually, how about this? Before we start discussing the different pagan and non-pagan traditions of Imbolc, let's go ahead and take a break. I'm going to play, it says it's music, by Raven Caldera, Candle Moth. So I'm going to play that. I haven't heard it, so let's see what it is. And we will be right back, and we'll start discussing other traditions.
One candle. wait for the flocks and herds. They have one who comes to all, one for strength and health, and one that ought not stumble and fall. One candle we light for open ears if the gods should call our name. That all roads be welcoming, and one for truth's bright name. One candle we light for gifts received, and one for the torch we hold. One for the rain, and one to constrain, and one for the winter's cold. One for the harvest of labor hard, and one of you. One for the fates that guard all time, and one for what God can do. One for the son of victory, and one for the warrior's will. One for height as tall as trees, one for breadth beyond the hill. For friends and family, and one for the river that rolls. One for the sacrifice of love, one for daybreak, one for old. One candle we light for the ancestors whose bones beneath us sleep. One for the oaken stave, and one for the boundary. For the song and the singer's gift, and one for the arrow's flight. One for the funeral pyre that fills the shadows all with light. In the name of all that is given to us, in the name of all we give, in the name of all that passes on, in the name of all that lives, in the name of all that calls to us, we light our candle three. One for the cup, and one for the stone, and one for the great world tree. One for the great world tree. One for the great world tree.
Pagans Tonight Radio Network needs your help in creating a pagan interfaith library in South Africa. The Karelian Nativist Tradition is sponsoring the creation of this library, but all paths are more than welcome to participate in this effort. Why South Africa? Great question. One book in South Africa costs the equivalent of 2 days of food there, and safety for pagans is also a concern. The library is seeking interfaith nonfiction and fiction books in good condition. Also welcome are pagan and interfaith CDs and DVDs, tarot card decks, divination tools, etc. Please note, due to international shipping rules, we cannot accept herbs, incense, candles, or perishables. So what's this got to do with you? There are several ways you and your community can help us succeed. First, you can donate some of your pagan books, whether fiction or nonfiction. Look at your bookshelf and ask yourself, if you haven't read a book or referred to it in a year or more, do you really need to hang on to it? Do you belong to a group? Then consider holding a book drive as part of your group's normal activities. Do you have a circle of pagan friends? You can promote the book mission by spreading the word through email and social media networks like Facebook and Twitter. The deadline for shipping donations is March 31st, 2013. All donations will be combined and shipped to South Africa in April 2013. Ship your items to Lori Denman, 11250 Old St. Augustine Road, Suite 15, number 150, Jacksonville, Florida, 32257, USA. Second, you can join Paperback Swap, swap.com, and create credits, which can be used to get books to a library. You can request whatever books you like to be shipped to the postal address I just mentioned, or you can donate your credits to the library itself so they can fill out the selection. Please donate credits to Lori D. Her username is GSCABOOSE. And finally, you can make a monetary donation to help cover the shipping costs in South Africa at karelian.com/donate.htm. Please be sure to earmark your donation for the South Africa Book Mission. To find out more about the mission, please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/CNTbooks or email your questions to cntbookmission@gmail.com.
All right, and before we get started on the different traditions of In Bulk, just to remind everyone, if you would like to call in and let us know what your personal tradition that you do on In Bulk is, it is area code 347-308-8222. So did everyone survive it through the break?
Well, you know I did.
I also survived.
You don't sound very happy about it.
I tried to not survive. Yeah, I don't know.
Serenity sounds a little out of it tonight. So, okay, so let's go on. Let's not pick on him too much.
Yeah, and let's not go chasing squirrels tonight.
Like that's going to happen.
Picking on you or the chasing squirrels? Because we've already been chasing the squirrels.
Yeah, a little bit, not too much.
Yes, both, but...
Too late, we've already done both.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Okay, so in general, we're going to talk about some different traditions for In Bulk. So the first thing is the interesting things about the day that it's celebrated. So I did some research, and it says that some neo-pagans, to use that term loosely, celebrated at the astronomical midpoint between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. Or they can also celebrate it as a full moon nearest this point. And it said in the northern hemisphere, which is where we are, this midpoint is when the ecliptic longitude, and this gets all technical, of the sun reaches 315 degrees.
Sure.
And the thing that I found most interesting is actually this year, that occurred on February 3rd.
Interesting.
So if you went by where the sun actually was, In Bulk was February 3rd.
That's very interesting.
And it says other neo-pagans celebrate In Bulk when the primroses, dandelions, other spring flowers emerge, which could be by tomorrow morning.
Yeah, especially here in Kentucky with 50-something degree weather in the middle of February.
So.
Sorry.
So, let's see. One tradition that I found some information specifically was for Celtic Reconstructionists, which of course emphasized the historical accuracy. So it says that they base their In Bulk celebrations on traditional lore and historic accounts of the festival. They usually celebrate the festival when the first stirrings of the spring are felt or on the full moon nearest this. Many use traditional songs and rites from sources such as the Silver Bough, the Carmina Gadelica, and it is a time of honoring the goddess Brigid, and many of her dedicants choose this time of year for rituals to her. So I kind of found it interesting to be able to read some of those books and see what the actual information on there is for the different.
You know,
specific rituals and traditions and stuff.
Agreed.
The next one, I actually got one that talked about Wiccans in general. So I didn't actually look at this too closely, so this will be interesting to see what it says. But it says Wicca, This is Wiccan celebrate a variation of In Bulk as one of the 8 holidays or Sabbats of the Wheel of the Year. In Bulk is defined as a cross-quarter day midway between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. In Wicca, In Bulk is commonly associated with the goddess Brigid, and as such, it is sometimes seen as a women's holiday, which with specific rites only for female members of a coven. Among Dianic Wiccans, In Bulk is a traditional time for initiation. Well, I didn't know that last part. But I'm also not a Dianic, so... I never really looked at it, though, as it just... I mean, personally, I never really looked at it as just being a woman's holiday.
Yeah.
Because to it takes the male aspect to bring about spring also, so...
Yeah, but... I don't know. Yeah, it strikes me odd as it being a female-only holiday, but that's also maybe just me.
Of course, I have this whole issue with that's what drew me to Wicca and paganism, you know, from the beginning was the whole equal female-male counterpart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and this is just my personal opinion. So it's very hard for me to do a ritual or to go specifically with one type of energy, male, female. To me, it has to be both. There has to be balance. But like I said, that's just me. I'm not trying to knock what anybody else can do. I'm just, you know, what anybody else does. It's just that's how personally it is for me.
And then one wise ghosty that I once heard at a festival say, as with anything, your mileage may vary.
Correct. Serenity, what is your take on, though, on it saying that about In Bulk being a female holiday?
Well, you know, my thinking tends to be much more balanced in terms of female and male. So, I feel like I think it's really awesome that there's ever a holiday to celebrate the feminine divine. But I also think that in order for there to be female, there must also be male. If that makes any sense.
No, that makes complete
sense. You know, no one's ever actually asked me this question.
Huh?
No.
No one's ever actually asked you that question.
Well,
and
I think, sorry, go on.
Well, and I think what Serenity said makes sense. You know, I think maybe Wiccans are coming about it, and then again, you're talking to somebody who's in a different thing, that there's no male deity that's traditionally associated with Breed and In Bulk, and maybe that's why maybe some people see it as strictly a feminine holiday. But also from what I understand, and anyone in the chat, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, because I may be wrong. I've been known to do that from time to time, that Dianic usually don't really work much with God, with the gods, or male energies at all. So that might be that too. So...
Right, but I just thought it was interesting how the research that I just read, and yes, I'm sorry, it came from Wikipedia. We all know that's correct, but that I just thought it was interesting that it actually specifically said female holiday and then listed the Dianic tradition a little bit separately. So,
well, I could maybe see it as a
mostly feminine holiday, but there are some masculine aspects to it. So, but that's my thought.
Right. So, all right, well, let's go on to the next one, which is one that you're going to take, I guess, the mic on this one, is the Ossetir or heathen aspect of the holiday.
Oh, okay. Well, depending on who you talk to, you will either hear it being called charming the plow or disting. It has other names too. Usually it's a regional variation. But one thing to keep in mind is that heathens don't necessarily celebrate it on February 2nd. The whole tradition for us behind charming the plow is basically getting ready to start planting. So this is the time of year that our ancestors would give offerings to the land, leave like grains and cakes and thanks for what the land gave us last year, and in hopes that the land will be just as abundant with us in the coming year. It's also a time to bless our plows, because we have to, when you're talking in northern tradition, you're talking, you know, we've got to get our crops planted. There are some deities that are associated with this holiday. A lot of it is the female deities. There are some male deities as well. There's, of course, as always, Freyr is the male deity who is associated with this holiday. And there's some association with Freyr wooing his wife, the maiden Gerd. This is also a holiday that celebrates the Disir, which, for those of you who don't know what the Disir is, that's the feminine, our feminine ancestors. And we'll talk a little bit more about this on our next Heathen Perspective show. But the Disir are our feminine ancestors. And this is also a holiday that revolves around them somewhat. And this is also a holiday where we're talking to the land whites, or as I refer to them, land spirits. And we're asking them to help us have an abundant harvest in the coming year. Some people throw Odin in there. Some people throw Frigga in there. It's one of those things where, as I always say, your mileage may vary. Other deities that will be thrown for charming the plow would be Jord, who, he's kind of an earth deity. Of course, Freyr. And the Edisthenes.
Who is that one again? I've not heard that.
Freyr is...
not Freyr, the other one.
Jord. I don't really know all that much about him, but he's kind of an earth deity. I really can't speak much about him. I know a couple more people who can actually talk about him more. So I really don't want to go very much into him, just simply because I really don't want to confuse people. Of course, they say Frigga. And then there's a couple of different other lesser deities that, if I pronounce them, people would be scratching their heads and going, what in the heck did she just say? But basically, it's kind of a holiday of that we should put back an offering of what we took from our land the year before. And usually it's grains, breads, cakes, anything like that. And some people will raise a horn and pour over this, and sometimes they'll have water, sometimes they'll have mead, depending on who you talk to. And sometimes charming the plow can go as late as early March, depending on where you live.
because like here in Kentucky, it looks like, hey, it's almost time to start putting plants in the ground. If, say, you're in Michigan or if you're in Canada or somewhere further north, it might not yet be time. You still might not have a lot of winter left yet to go. So that's something else to keep in mind. We like to honor our land spirits, of course. They're very important to us. A lot of heathens tend to focus, of course, on our female ancestors for this holiday as well, because we want them to help us, help our line, and help us get through the season and be able to put good plants in the ground and have a very productive harvest. So that would be Charming of the Plow in a nutshell, and I hope I didn't confuse anyone. So let's see. Serenity, you have anything you want to add?
I don't think so. I feel like you nailed it.
Okay. So I guess, and Reverend Millie in the chat room said that it's also very common, it says Native Americans do as much as well, which I actually find that very interesting that's kind of neat, actually, that there's a little bit of parallel between heathens in Scandinavia and Native Americans. I think that's really, really cool. So,
someone just posted in Native Americans do as much as well.
Yeah, I just said something about that.
Oh, okay, sorry. I was checking this online. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I was just commenting on, I find that very cool that there's parallels between Native American religions and heathens in Scandinavia and pagans. I think that's awesome that there's that parallel there. So
awesome. So to go on, I'm sorry, were you done discussing the Charming of the Plow?
Yes, okay. I was done discussing it because we do have to have something to talk about next week.
Okay. All right. So the next subject is actually the Christian version of Candlemas, which is partially known as, I guess fully known, I don't know. I never really, even when I was a Baptist, I didn't really know of this. I actually learned more about this when I started celebrating in bulk than I knew about it when I was Christian. Candlemas was the presentation of Jesus at the temple, which falls on the 2nd of February, celebrates an early episode in the life of Jesus. In the Eastern Orthodox Church and some Eastern Catholic churches, it is one of the 12 great feasts, and is sometimes called, and Raven, you might be able to pronounce this, I don't know if I'm saying this right,
Hypaphanate.
That's not how it's spelled.
Yeah. I would say hypaphanate. It's Greek. So.
Right, and it actually means meeting in Greek. So it says other traditional names include Candlemas, the Feast of the Purification of the Virgin, and the Meeting of the Lord. In the Roman Catholic Church, the Feast of the Presentation of the Lord is a feast day. The major feast between the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul the Apostle on January 25th and the Feast of the Chair of St. Peter the Apostle on the 22nd. Wow, that's a lot of feasts. It says
you didn't grow up Catholic.
No, I didn't. In some Western liturgical churches, Vespers, on the Feast of the Presentation marks the end of Epiphany season. In the Church of England, the Presentation of Christ in the Temple is a principal feast celebrated either on 2nd of February or on the Sunday between January 28th and February 3rd. And then it says, in the Latin Rite of the Roman Catholic Church, the Presentation of Jesus at the Temple is the fourth joyful mystery of the Rosary. It was also reflected in the former practice of the Church of New Mothers 40 days after the birth of a child. Practice of the churching of new mothers 40 days after the birth of a child.
Yeah, that was a medieval cultural tradition where your highborn women were not considered able to rejoin society until they were churched. So.
Right, and then it's also in some places, we already touched on it, but, you know, St. Bridget's Day.
And Reverend Don had a comment in chat. He says that all of what we think of as grand sabbats made their way through Celtic Christianity into Roman Catholicism.
Right.
Which,
as someone who grew up
Catholic, yeah, that is so absolutely true.
Well, I have a friend who has been pagan for a long time, and she actually sent her kids and raised them in the Catholic Church and going to a Catholic private school because there are a lot of traditions and the rituals and, you know, a lot of stuff the same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, she was pagan, but, you know, she raised her kids to go into the Catholic Church and Catholic school to, you know, so because that way they grow up in what was considered a normal environment at the time to still be close to their magical roots, I guess you'd say.
Oh, yeah, and for those of you who have never been to a Catholic Mass before or anything like that, especially if you go to one of the high Masses, it's very ritualistic. And it, even though it's not the same as us passing a circle and doing what we do, it's very ritualistic, and you see a lot of elements of paganism. It's an undercurrent there. It's kind of interesting that it's just right below the surface if you look for it.
Right. So we're getting close towards the end of our show, so I'm going to actually bring up one of the most well-known versions of this holiday that is probably a little bit more commercial than most, and that would be Groundhog Day.
Puxatawny
Phil. Yeah, and I guess it's not so much commercial as in you're going out buying greeting cards, blah, blah, blah. But I guess commercial wasn't really the right word. I guess the word I was looking for was
cultural?
Secular.
Yeah.
It's more secular than sacred.
Right. But it's still a fun day.
Right. So this is Groundhog Day. Which is a day celebrated February 22nd. It says, according to folklore, if it is cloudy when a groundhog emerges from its burrow on this day, then spring will come early. If it is sunny, the groundhog will supposedly see his shadow and retreat back into its burrow, and the winter weather will continue for 6 more weeks, which is very, very closely related to the story about the divination with the witch.
Mm-hmm.
And modern customs of the holiday involve celebrations where early morning festivals are held to watch the groundhog emerge from its burrow. Now, does anybody know what happened with Phil?
I don't know what happened with Phil this year.
Serenity, do you know what happened with Phil?
I have no clue.
I can't believe how three of us, none of us know what happened with Phil.
Hey, I have an excuse. I've been at work. Oh, Reverend Millie says Phil did not see his shadow.
Okay. Well, then that's a good thing, right?
Yes. Thank you, Reverend Millie.
I was actually trying to ask someone when I was at work. They were not happy that I was asking.
If they'll follow shadow.
Do what?
Wait a minute. They weren't happy you were asking if they'll follow shadow?
Yeah, they weren't asked. They were like, why would you even care about that?
It's important,
like,
people.
I was like, I was just wondering.
You know what's really sad is that I actually didn't even know that there was an official groundhog until I watched the movie Groundhog Day. Does anybody even know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
Wait, what did you say?
I've seen the movie. It's actually quite hilarious.
Groundhog
Although
Day
never...
with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I've seen that. It's just been forever.
Well, I didn't even
know
that there was an official groundhog until I watched that movie. And I was like, really? And then I did a search and I found that there was an official groundhog.
Yep. Punxsutawney Phil.
So I just thought that was interesting.
So. It is.
So just to wrap up our show, we just kind of wanted to discuss the bot that is, you know, celebrated amongst all kinds of religions and paths and, you know, isn't just even just a pagan holiday. It's also, you know, Christian in a way. And we just wanted to, you know, kind of show that.
Well, and different faith traditions have different ways of practicing or doing the same thing. Maybe it's for different reasons, but it goes back to the one thing where there's a lot of similarities in across religions. There are differences, there are similarities, and this is one of those times where there are a lot of similarities.
Everyone is saying Phil's the most popular. There are actually a number of different locations that have been the subject of festivities on Groundhog's Day, that Phil has conquered all. And that's from Reverend Dawn. And then he said, Phil, the groundhog of groundhogs.
Yes, indeed. Punxsutawney Phil. Although, don't ask me to spell Punxsutawney, because, yeah.
I think it begins with P, because I remember seeing it written out one time.
I know it begins with a P, and I'm from Kentucky, sorry, you know.
Yeah, we only spell phonetically here. That's a lie. I'm just joking. Don't jump on me. So,
we have our own. We do have our own language down here too. You know, come on.
Okay. So we're going to tie that off. And Serenity, do you have some of the future events for us, or some current events that are going to happen?
I do. Maybe. Where'd they go? Okay. Pagan Community Ministries is having Dark Moon on the 11th at 7. They are holding a Pagan Alliance of Kentuckiana meeting on the 12th at 7. There's the Roots of Awareness Psychic Fair on the 16th and 17th. And Full Moon is on the 25th. Where'd you go? That's
now,
March.
Where are these events happening?
They are happening at Matrix of Place of Change, which is at 605 South Shelby Street.
Now, is Pagan Alliance of Kentuckiana, or PAC, is it also meeting there, or are they still meeting at the Denny's?
They are still meeting at Denny's at Eastern Parkway and Crittenden Drive.
And this is all in Louisville, Kentucky, for those of y'all in the surrounding area.
And also, there is a women's weekend coming up in that, if you know Sned Lewis, that she is having, and I don't remember what exact weekend that is on.
February 15th.
February 15th. So not this weekend, but next weekend, correct?
Yes.
So
and
we'll need... Go on.
And And for those of you all who are in the Lexington, Kentucky area, it's actually a really, it's for women, and it's a really excellent weekend if you can get away. Me and Samara were able to go last year, and we actually learned a whole lot that weekend.
Yes, and we had a great weekend. Even though there wasn't a lot of people there because of the snow, it was still great.
Yes.
But let's see. So we what is
and
going, sorry.
I was going to say, and I think the web address for if you're interested in that is luniel.com. For anyone who's interested in that, it'll be in Lexington, Kentucky.
I couldn't remember how to spell it. Thank you.
All right. Oh, you want to know about next week, huh?
Well, first, real quick, did you have anything else, Trinity?
No, I couldn't find anything else. First Unitarian is not having another event that I can find until March.
Okay. Then we will go more into that next week.
And then real quick, if you have an event, either in our area or nationwide or somewhere, and you want us to give it a plug on your show, please feel free to contact us at facebook.com/treeoflife, LOUKY, and we will be more than happy to mention your event during the event section of our show. So don't just think it's just for Kentucky and Louisville area folks. You know, if you've got something going on and you want people to know about it, let us know and we'll announce it for you.
All right, and real quick, we're actually 1 minute over, so what is next week's show?
Next week, Heathen Perspectives, we are going to be talking about Deseer and ancestors and land spirits. So it's going to be a really cool show, and we will be joined by the wonderful, lovely, and talented Laura Fuller.
All right, awesome. So we need to get off of here and let Reverend Dawn and Reverend Terry on for the night. So everyone have a beautiful evening or morning or afternoon, wherever you are.
And y'all be safe out there.
What they said.
All right, everyone have a good night. And I'm going to play something I've never played before because it sounds interesting. I'm going to play Q-Dub. I might be saying it wrong. C-U and D-U-B-H. And the song is called Rasen. Rasen? I don't know. H-R-A-S-N. So I'm going to play that. And everyone have a great evening. And we will talk to you next week.
white father now calls you his brother, not his children, because you have shown in your education and in your settled ways of life staunch, manly, worthy qualities of sound character, qualities of sound character, qualities of sound character, character, sound white.
Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida, and I hope you're having a lovely week. Last week we did a ritual this time of the week. This week we have open phones, and so if you have any questions you would like to discuss, call them in. Our call-in number is 347-308-8222, or if you happen to be in the chat room, feel free to type them directly into the chat room. And what I do on Open Phone Night is I basically talk about anything people want to talk about, and so your questions will direct the program. And as we go forward, we're probably going to be changing our format a little bit, and some of our evenings will be devoted to teaching on specific subjects, and others. We'll still be open phones, we'll certainly still have our ritual, and we'll probably have occasional interviews as well. So I think that will be fun. And I believe we have a question in our chat room. The question comes from Wild Silver Wolf, who asked me to tell my journey to Wicca paganism story. Not how I came out of the broom closet, but how I came to know the goddess or found the cauldron. And that is, that's an interesting question. And the answer is that, you know, I'm a Karelian Wiccan, and we are a familial tradition, so I was raised with it. And I began instruction really around the age of 11. I was initiated in 1976. So I came to it very early, and it was not in any way an act of rebellion for me, and that has given me a particular perspective. I wasn't fleeing from any other religion, although I was encouraged to study all other religions. And, you know, my mother, I was talking the other night to, I want to say to Lady Janice here in Florida, although it's possible this conversation could have happened in Georgia, but my mother was very disappointed that she could not find a synagogue in Danville, because she was taking me to every different kind of house of worship she could find so that I would be exposed to all different kinds of philosophy and religion. And so I was raised not only with my mother's religion, but also around many others as well. And when I came to an age to show interest and to be receptive to training, I was given it. So I don't have a particularly colorful story of how I came to it. I kind of started there in a lot of ways, although I did look into other things. And I studied many other things. And I like to think that that attitude gave me a very very rounded outlook in general. As far as coming out of the broom closet, I was pretty much out. As soon as that initiation happened, I remember talking about Wicca with my seventh grade teacher in I guess we would have called it junior high school at the time, and had many, many wonderful conversations with my Latin teacher in high school, who was very interested. So it wasn't necessarily lunchroom conversation, but I didn't really make a secret of it at all. And one of the reasons for that is that I had been raised with a great deal of secrecy. And my father was very concerned with that sort of thing. And I reached a decision very early in my life that I was not going to live in fear or in secrecy. I often tell the story that my father used to give instructions on how to behave when the lynch mob came, because he was certain one day it would come, because it was such a dangerous world for people like ourselves. And, you know, my attitude after that was, you know, if this is what fate should hold, then I will deal with it. But I'm not going to live in secrecy. And so a lot of my ideas were colored by those experiences. So I'm sure it's not the answer, well, probably not the answer you're expecting, though if you've listened to, I know Wild Silver Wolf has listened to the show for a while, so it might be the answer I was expecting. But yeah, that's the story for me. And I see in the chat room, Silver Nighthawk is saying that she found her way to Wicca via her niece. And, you know, I found that to be a story I've also heard very often. Older people who found their way to the religion through younger people, often a child or a niece or a nephew. And people have had a lot of different paths to this religion today. Most of them are coming from something else, and sometimes that's more problematic than others. It depends how much in reaction they are to their previous religion or whether they really left it behind. We do get people who never seem to move out of that reaction stage, and that can be a problem because the whole point of this path is self-healing and clarity and communication with spirit, not reaction to others. And one of the things I like to stress to people is the importance of defining yourself by what you are and not really so much by what you are not. And you know, a lot of people who are in reaction to another group will tell you all about how they don't believe this and they don't believe that and they're not like these and they're not like those. But what you need to do really is to look not at what you are not, but at what you are. Not at how you differ from other groups, but at what you yourself believe. And if other groups believe differently, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That's their path. And so defining oneself as one's own yardstick is a very important thing, both for individuals and for movements. And I think that sometimes as a movement, we have tended to shortchange ourselves by being more concerned with how we measure against others than how we measure against ourselves. There is a saying that comes from Kipling's poems, the race is won by one and one, not by two and two. And in the end, what others are doing doesn't matter. It's what you yourself have done. And you must be defined ultimately by what you choose to be. So do we have other questions? I see that Silver Nighthawk remarks upon the feeling. Silver Nighthawk says, it was awesome. It was like I finally came home. And I find that that's a very frequent comment from people who come to Wicca, that they feel very much they've come home. And I think one of the reasons for that, I do believe in the old idea that many people who are coming to this movement have been in this movement, perhaps under another name, in other lifetimes, that they're rediscovering things, not necessarily for the first time, but rediscovering them. But the other thing is that so much in our religion is also common folk practice. And we really are, in a lot of ways, a codification of what have been very wide practices that have been perhaps less formal in the past. Very often when you come to the religion, you say, oh, I finally have a word for what I already believed. There's reason for that. Now, we have a question from Afterfove, who says, Reverend Don, how does one do that while under constant conflict and struggle? And, you know, conflict and struggle certainly is a difficult place to be. And it can either build you up or tear you down. But You know, in alchemy, they talk about the athanor, or the alchemical furnace, which breaks the original matter down to its components. And conflict and struggle are kind of that same way, that they will break down your outer forms and cause you to rebuild yourself. And when you're in a position of conflict and struggle, you really need to look within yourself and find who you truly are. And in that sense, it can actually be your benefactor, though it may not feel that way at that moment. And Sparrow in the chat room remarks on the idea of the shamanic journey, which is basically what I'm describing, being taken apart and put back together again. And I'm full of clichés at the moment, but it's like the Zen saying that you cannot fill a full bowl. It has to be empty. And you cannot rebuild something that has not to some extent been disassembled. What I would say is to look at your situation where you're experiencing that conflict and struggle and bring to bear your magical consciousness upon it. I know you listen to this show almost every week, pretty much every week. I know that you're versed in magic. Use those skills. Transform your life. Do not allow others to control you. And whatever it is that you desire, it can be done. But whether you believe you can or whether you believe you can't, you will find that you are correct. So that would be my comment on what you can do under constant conflict and struggle. The other thing is, you might ask yourself why that conflict is there at an existential level. But I would say to work with sending it away. Work with changing your life, work with bringing in different circumstances, but do be aware when you make changes, changes come. But do not be just a passive recipient of fate. Make your fate. And you will find that truly everything is possible if you allow it to be. Now, I see we're at 20 past the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and take our first break, and then we'll be back for more conversation. And our break will be Kenny Klein with The Fairy Queen. Thank you.
Tonight Radio Network needs your help in creating a pagan interface library in South Africa. The Karelian Nativist Tradition is sponsoring the creation of this library, but all paths are more than welcome to participate in this effort. Why South Africa? Great question. One book in South Africa costs the equivalent of 2 days of food there, and safety for pagans is also a concern. The library is seeking interfaith nonfiction and fiction books in good condition. Also welcome are pagan and interfaith CDs and DVDs, tarot card decks, divination tools, etc. Please note, due to international shipping rules, we cannot accept herbs, incense, candles, or perishables. So what's this got to do with you? There are several ways you and your community can help us succeed. First, you can donate some of your pagan books, whether fiction or nonfiction. Look at your bookshelf and ask yourself, if you haven't read a book or referred to it in a year or more, do you really need to hang on to it? Do you belong to a group? Then consider holding a book drive as part of your group's normal activities. Do you have a circle of pagan friends? You can promote the book mission by spreading the word through email and social media networks like Facebook and Twitter. The deadline for shipping donations is March 31st, 2013. All donations will be combined and shipped to South Africa in April 2013. Ship your items to Lori Denman, 11250 Old St. Augustine Road, Suite 15, number 150, Jacksonville, Florida, 32257, USA. Second, you can join paperbackswap.com and create credits, which can be used to get books to the library. You can request whatever books you like to be shipped to the postal address I just mentioned, or you can donate your credits to the library itself so they can fill out the selection. Please donate credits to Lori D. Her username is GSCABOOSE. And finally, you can make a monetary donation to help cover the shipping costs to South Africa at karelian.com/donate.htm. Please be sure to earmark your donation for the South Africa Book Mission. To find out more about the mission, please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/groups/CNTBooks. Or email your questions to cntbookmission@gmail.com.
And we're back, and this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. And I understand the East Coast is bracing for a massive blizzard tonight and tomorrow, which leads me to say once again, beautiful Florida. I'm just as happy to be here. I am currently appearing at the Children of Gaia Temple, and last week I was appearing at the Sacred Sea Temple in Georgia, and I've been having a wonderful time in these opening weeks of my southern tour. And we were talking about struggle and conflict. And after Fove has remarked in the chat room, it's hard living in fear. I wish I could get past the emotion. And this actually, I think, is a crucial point. The emotion is often the thing that's causing or certainly worsening the problem. And I have a recommendation for that. And some of my standard recommendations, I have a lot more things in my books. I have a lot more things we talk about at Witch School. But What I most commonly recommend would be perfect for this. One of the things I most commonly recommend, a simple burning spell. So what I'm going to recommend for you after Phobos is that you sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and write down everything you're feeling about your situation. And be very honest with yourself and look at all of the pain, all of the sorrow, all of the anger, all of the emotions that are swirling around you, and write them down. And don't leave it there, but follow each one as far as you can. Why are you feeling it? What does it trigger for you? What does it connect to? And follow this through just as deeply as you possibly can. Then set it aside for that night. Come back to it the next day and look at it again. And ask yourself with each thing, is this absolutely true? Or is it something that can be changed? Is this what I really feel? Or is this an emotional reflection in my mind? Look at all of them and decide what you can release, what you do not want in your life, whether it's an external circumstance or an internal emotion. Write those down, burn them, and send them away. And it would probably be good to do a full-fledged circle for it, lots of energy. You want to send lots of energy into that fire while it's burning. Burn them, send them away. I would strongly recommend that. As being a good way to address this kind of issue, as an initial thing to do. And I found that sort of burning spell can be very effective very quickly. Now, we have another question in the chat room from Sparrow, who, if you don't know, Sparrow is the host of Main Street Universe, a podcast that is very, very positive and very, very worth watching, listening. And Sparrow says, Reverend Don, I have heard inmates mention that a warden or council denied them books about witchcraft, and I'm wondering if you can comment on the importance of pagan prison ministry. And I can. But I will say that I think it's a complex issue for our community as a whole. I am under the impression that those people studying paganism in prison who have never experienced the actual community often come out with very false expectations of what this community is like. And as a community, we have very few safeguards for dealing with the prison population. And I think that this is an issue that we often want to deal with, but that we're only just learning how to effectively deal with. There are a lot of pagans in prison. There are a lot of people in prison who discover paganism, and it can be a wonderful thing for them. And I certainly commend those people who are working with that. In terms of integrating them into the community, I think a lot more work needs to be done. And as for not being able to get books to them, I think that requires advocacy and education on the part of the wider community. But a lot of that is changing. And there are a lot of people who are working with this and who are working in the wider world to overcome the prejudices of the past. And I think that, you know, many years ago, Pete Pathfinder Davis, the archpriest of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church, remarked to me that the thing that other religions wanted to see from us and so rarely did was some system of accountability within our movement. So that if someone did something bad, something could be done about it. We don't have a lot of that. Arguably, some of our traditions do, but as a community, there's very little. And I think we need to be careful to some extent how we handle the integration of pagan prisoners so that everybody gets a good outcome. And Sparrow remarks, and having heard a story where a person was denied a book with Hebrew sections because it was considered to be witchcraft, and sadly, I suspect that's completely true. There are some breathtakingly ignorant people in positions of power. If you talk to Patrick McCollum, you can find out exactly how ignorant some of them are. And it really makes you shake your head. But the thing that we can do as a community is continue to educate, continue to show by example what we're actually about, and also to make sure that what we are actually about is our highest and best good, and to stay focused on our spirituality, to stay focused on the best things that we are, so that, in fact, we are a good example of good, strong, spiritual people. I would love to be able to say that we can be highly transformative in the lives of many prisoners, and I think that this is potentially true, and occasionally true now. But I think that there are times when it's likely to turn out to be a path of frustration when they try to integrate into the actual community. And I think that that's an aspect of pagan prison ministry that only a few are looking at. And after Fove asks, do we want awareness? And the answer is, oh, God, yes. Our worst enemy is ignorance, always has been. And, you know, I was asked recently, I did an interview with a lady who was writing a paper on Friday, I believe it was. Recently, anyway. It may not have been Friday, but one of her questions had to do with a very common question about how Hollywood portrays witches and pagans. And, you know, my answer to that is Hollywood has been a great friend to us in recent years. And things like Harry Potter and Charmed and other, and the Good Witch series have done tremendous amounts to take the baggage out of the W word, the witch word, and cause people to be much less frightened, much less ignorant than they once were. Even though most of these things do not really touch on our actual community at all. But the things that hold us back aren't usually the things that are in our actual community. They are the fear that people have around certain words, such as witch and magic, that attach to us. And so I would say, yes, we really do want awareness of what we are versus the baggage that comes with those words. I think it's vitally important. Because usually when people find out what we actually are, they're pretty open to it. In fact, as we were talking about earlier, a lot of people will say, oh, that's pretty much what I believe. Or they'll go so far as to say, oh, my God, I found a word for what I believed all along. And that's actually not an uncommon reaction. and after Fove remarks in the chat room that how Hollywood has portrayed witches in the past led a lot of kids to be disappointed when they ran away from home to join the Ozzy cult. And yeah, that's probably true. I would not necessarily say that Hollywood was always our friend. But I think in the last 20 years, it's largely been, even the new movie Witch Hunters, which I've seen some people have a knee-jerk reaction against, apparently goes out of its way to emphasize that there are good witches and bad witches. Now, Silver Nighthawk remarks in the chat room, I consider myself a witch, but in public, I usually describe myself as Wiccan. And that's very common. And Silver Nighthawk remarks that it seems more acceptable to the general public, and it absolutely is. There is a reason that the witch movement in this country moved to the word Wicca back in the late 70s and early 80s, not anticipating that it would end up in a war over the word, but it had everything to do with the fact that the word Wicca does not have the baggage of the word witch. And It is very important that we be conscious of the baggage that people bring to some of these words. We get used to them because we use them. Not all of them necessarily were self-descriptors that were chosen by the movement. I think many of them came to us from outside. But even when they were chosen, people forget how powerful those words can be, not always in a positive sense. And so increasing awareness of who and what we really are, I think, is vitally, vitally important. And Sparrow in the chat room remarks that he finds the war over the word to be pointless, and remarks on the fact that Wicca can be found in old Anglo-Saxon in an old Anglo-Saxon dictionary, which is absolutely true. And the word Wicca actually was in very wide use as an etymology of the word witch 100 years ago. It's used in Tolkien to describe the wizards. So it was not exactly a word that came out of nowhere. And it was already understood as a synonym for witch or wizard, again, at least 100 years ago. Now, after Fauve remarks, someone asked if my teacher was a good witch or a bad witch. I asked their religion, and they said Baptist. And I asked if you're a good Baptist or a bad Baptist, which I think is actually a really good answer, because they come in both kinds. I read today where a Missouri Synod Baptist minister had to publicly apologize for taking part in a prayer vigil with priesthood from other religions, and I can only shake my head. And I believe it was remarked that the larger Baptist Synod was somewhat more liberal on that particular subject. What struck me was the numbers that were given for the people who belong to the Missouri Baptist Synod and the larger one, whose exact name I don't remember at this moment. But, you know, they weren't that big, actually. It was like 2.4 million, 4 million. I suddenly feel like I'm part of a larger movement than I might have thought before I saw those numbers. Now, Wild Silver Wolf asks if I can talk about the idea of someone calling themselves Christo-Pagan, Christo-Wiccan, etc., and having Christian themes within their practice. And what I would say to that is that this is certainly not a new thing. It's a comparatively new term, meaning that you really have been seeing it within the last 20, 25 years, I would say. But it's not really a new thing. I would really say that Christo-Paganism is a continuation of the long-standing practice of Devolveria, or double faith. I've been known to term it decadent paganism because it's paganism with a Christian gloss. I don't see anything particularly objectionable in it as a rule. What I generally say is that you kind of have to ask yourself, if you're going to follow this kind of practice, what parts go together and what parts don't. Sparrow remarks that a lot of old witches were church ladies, and the truth is he's absolutely right. Because that was a safe place to be. And one of the things that I would say to that is that certain Christian ideas are completely compatible with Wiccan ideas, such as the idea of loving your neighbor, the idea of doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. I don't see that there's any problem with that kind of thing. The idea of heaven and hell and original sin is an entirely different matter. It kind of depends on what you're talking about. Christianity is a very wide range of topics, as is paganism. Some of them go together beautifully. Others really do not mix. But they're both such wide subjects that you can't really make a blanket statement that, oh, that could never work, because truth is, for many people, it does. And what about a Christian using pagan ideas? Well, they've been doing that for a long time. In the previous hour, the comment was made, actually, I made the comment in the chat room, but what we think of as our Grand Sabbats are also major feasts within the Roman Catholic Church. They got there from traditional Celtic religion by way of Celtic Christianity, which was then absorbed into Roman Catholicism. But Imbolc, or Emel, became the Christian Candlemas, which also is a commonly used term for the celebration, even in paganism. And I can remember when it was the dominant term, because very few people really pronounce Gaelic well. Lunasa became Lammas. Samhain became All Hallows' Eve. all of which are Roman Catholic feasts. So Christians using pagan ideas has a very long pedigree. Now, do I think this is something that's helpful to us? That's a whole other question. But it's absolutely something we must be aware of and deal with. And the truth of the matter is, many of the things that were once teachings and practices that were common among our people and non-existent among theirs, you can now go into Christian churches and see them doing with a Christian gloss over it. And I think that this is neither good nor bad. It simply is. And, you know, if it helps them, more power to them. Anything that makes people more spiritual is a good thing. And I think that we, too, must learn from them. I think that we're very foolish in that many of our people reject anything that is remotely Christian, when, in fact, many of those things work really well, and we should be thinking about them. I see that we are at 10 minutes of the hour, so I'm going to take our second break, and let's see what interesting thing we can listen to in the second break. Why don't we listen to Wendy Rule, My Heart is an Open Flower.
My heart is like an open flower that breathes its petals to the sun. My heart is like an open flower that must endure what it's begun. So frail are the stamens of the soul, and delicate the petals of the mind. My heart is like an open flower that mourns the love it leaves behind.
During our commercial break. And now, back to our show.
And we're back. And this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from beautiful Florida. And in the chat room, we have the question from Afterfove: what sort of teacher would you describe Jesus as being? A shaman or what? And actually, I would say that Jesus, for the most part, fits pretty neatly into Hellenistic Platonic thought. He was very obviously, I would say, influenced by the international Platonic ideas that were current at the time. He also was strongly influenced by his Jewish heritage, but certain parts of it. But the mixture of these two is what made his philosophy, or the philosophy attributed to him, into something new and different. And the dichotomy between them created a dynamic tension that has been there ever since. And it allows Christianity to frequently play, well, to play both sides of an issue, to be honest. And you can see that very much in the last century. On one hand, you have those Christians who believe strongly in love thy neighbor and do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And on the other hand, you have those who believe strongly in an eye for an eye and kill them all and let God sort them out. And they both can justify their positions, which is certainly an effective strategy. But it is something that has given them tremendous resilience and strength. Now, we had a comment, if I can see where it went, that, they were talking in the chat room about people having lived shorter lives in the past. And I thought I would comment upon that, even though it wasn't a question. But, you know, people often confuse the idea of life expectancy with lifespan. And it is true that if you look at life expectancy throughout most of history, it was far shorter than today. I believe in the time of Ramesses the Great, the life expectancy was about 17 years. The average life expectancy was 17 years. However, there were people who were living into their 90s then, just as now. Because the average life expectancy is just that. It's the average. And one of the things that makes it so young were the number of children dying from diseases that did not then have cures, as well as a high infant mortality rate in general. And so people sometimes have the impression that everybody was dropping dead young. That isn't exactly what was happening. But far more people did. Now, I see that After Fove is in the queue. And what is your prefix, After Fove? If you'd be kind enough to type it into the chat room for me, I will bring you on. Okay, we got After Fove.
Hello.
After Fove, is that you? Hello.
Yeah.
How are you? Well, I suppose that's a silly question.
actually, after what you said, I'm doing pretty good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I just found it interesting. I'm just going to share an experience I had today. Years ago, when I was a Christian, years and years ago, I helped out and donated to a church cause to help build a new church. And shortly before the church was built, I left Christianity and followed this path. So I never got to see the interior of the new church. Well, today I decided, I was driving by, and I just decided to pull in. And I looked and see if there was like a priest nearby or somebody I could ask for permission to go in, because the church door is always open. I wasn't going to be rude and go in unannounced, but I couldn't find anyone. So I ended up going in anyways, and I looked in, and it was a very beautifully well-designed, well-thought-out church. It was, and I walked in, it was very potent energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I immediately turned to my right, and I looked at it, and they had these beautiful stained glass windows, and I turned to my right, and I looked, and there was a stained glass of Jesus doing the loaves and the fishes, and the sun pointed right through the window, right in the exact spot where the halo was, and I thought that was cool.
Yes, indeed.
And I walked out, and I see a hawk flying off. Well, for me, a hawk is an omen of there's problems coming.
Okay.
And that's also what I was talking about with a lot of stressful problems, is that this evening I ran into a lot of those problems. And so I thought back, well, I did see a hawk. But also, this time I saw the hawk, though, flying away.
Uh-huh.
And when we were talking about a lot of the Christo-Pagan things today and what you're mentioning, that's the experience of, and then, earlier in the first program today, they were talking about Imbolc and how it relates to the Christianity and the Christo myth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like everything today is like going, wow.
Well, you know, one of the beautiful
one of those
things.
Moments. Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the beautiful things about this movement, at least Karelian Wicca, and eclectic Wicca in general, I would say, is that we're not really about giving things up. We're about expansion and growth. And, you know, if there are parts of other religions that have meaning for you, carry them forward. You don't have to give anything up just because you've expanded your understanding. Or at least that's how I see it.
It wasn't so much that I'd given anything up. It was just that was the settings in which the goddess or the eternal spirit said, this is where I'm going to tell. This is the settings in which I'm going to tell you something.
Very cool.
Because it was a symbolism that I could understand.
Well, you know, spirit will always try to find what you can understand. And because after all, the message doesn't make any sense if you can't interpret it. And I would say, in terms of dealing with an omen, for example, like you mentioned, the hawk. What it means to you is what it means for you. And it might mean something else to someone else. But spirit will use your language to speak to you.
It was just with everything that was mentioned on the show tonight, it was just one of those moments of the spirit is trying to talk to me. And I thought it was an experience I should share with everyone.
Wonderful.
Both shows tonight rather spoke a lot to me, and just that one experience today it's just one of those moments where earlier tonight I had a very stressful situation, but it's just one of those moments where, okay, this is what I have to do.
Absolutely. I'm glad you did share that. And, you know, things like that remind you, spirit is right there with you. You are not alone. And so whatever it is that you need to do, know that spirit is with you, and everything will be good. So thank you for calling in, Afterfolk.
Thank you.
And we're almost at the end of our hour, and it's been a lovely hour. I certainly always enjoy talking with people, and I'm very glad Afterfolk called in. In the chat room, they're currently talking about the lost books of the Bible. And there was a comment made that the books stay lost because it's convenient to the church if they stay lost. And I would have to point out that you can buy most of them on Amazon.com. They're not really that lost. There are a few that were lost. The Book of Enoch really was lost. And pretty much all of the Western copies actually were destroyed. And for many years, it was one of the things that was a source of great curiosity to many people, what that book actually was about. And then there was an explorer who was traveling through what is now Ethiopia. I believe at the time it was called Abyssinia. And he found that the Abyssinian church had never banned the Book of Enoch, and it was right there to be read. And he eagerly brought one home and translated it and was terribly disappointed by what it contained because it seemed to be a mishmash of things out of the New Testament. And obviously could not be the original Book of Enoch, which was older than the New Testament because it included things out of the New Testament like the Sermon on the Mount. So he was very disappointed. And of course, this was a couple of hundred years ago. So he never knew that when the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, one of the things that came out was a copy of the Book of Enoch, which was pretty much identical to the Abyssinian version, and really does include things like the Sermon on the Mount, which in fact was quoted apparently from the Book of Enoch. So there are some interesting things if you care about that sort of thing. For the most part, as a pagan, I'm not all that concerned. But I do know, I do certainly have the occasional historical curiosity. So I see that we've come to the end of our hour. And I want to thank everyone for being with us tonight. And I certainly have enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it. And I hope you join me again next Thursday night when we will continue our adventures in the witchness of the Y and the wonderful world of spirituality. And until then, may you blessed be.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagans tonight@gmail.com and let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from you. You can also visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on LiveJournal. We invite you to tune in again tomorrow night. Good night, and blessed be.